Welcome to the Hemophilia edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the hemophilia community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking with Damon Race, President and CEO of GeneVentive Therapeutics, based in Raleigh, North Carolina. We caught up with Damon at the recent World Orphan Drug Congress USA, just outside Washington, D.C., where he made a presentation on the company's universal gene therapy for all types of hemophilia. Thank you for speaking with us today.
Good morning, Larry. It's great to speak with you.
So, why hemophilia and why this particular approach? Can you give us an overview of the company and what it is you do?
For me, it was an opportunity. I sifted through 30 to 40 assets coming out of universities to build a new company around. I have 25 years of experience in commercial pharmaceuticals and investment. And so I was looking for a new technology to build a company around. As I looked through university assets that were ready for technology transfer to a startup, I found this asset, our lead program, which is the first universal gene therapy and the first that can address the needs of a certain group of hemophilia patients for whom the gene therapies in development wouldn't work. They have severe complications from what are called neutralizing antibodies to their missing clotting factor. This ended up being the right asset for us to build a company around and makes use of my background to move the technology out of an academic center and along the path of development and commercialization.
Okay, interesting. In the developed world, in your presentation, you mentioned that there are some 150,000 people currently with hemophilia, of which 32,000 have inhibitors. Can you go into more detail, please?
Yeah, that's the breakdown in the developed countries, in the world's largest markets, which are the United States and in Europe. That's where we have intellectual property. The types of hemophilia that people suffer from are hemophilia A, which is a deficiency of a clotting factor called factor VIII, and in hemophilia B, which is about 10% of the patient population, they do not make factor IX. In both cases, the patients, if they cut themselves, they can bleed uncontrollably. And the standard of treatment is administration via infusion a couple times a week of their missing clotting factor. Of course, there are exciting gene therapies that are in development for hemophilia. One was recently approved, and that's HEMGENIX, which is CSL Behring's gene therapy. It treats about 10% of the patient population. Unfortunately, 30% of the patient population is left behind and has no hope of benefiting from those gene therapies. And that's where we come in.
30% of people with hemophilia A, which represents about 90% of the patient population, right?
No, it's about 30% of the overall population with either hemophilia A or B have those inhibitors or neutralizing antibodies to their missing clotting factor. That's what makes the current treatments and the future treatments, the gene therapies, ineffective.
I see. And what about for hemophilia B? How big is that market?
Hemophilia B is about, it ranges from 4 to, the estimates range from 4 to 10% of the population. Now, inhibitor formation or neutralizing antibodies in that population is much rarer than in the hemophilia A population. It's only about 5% of the people with hemophilia B that have inhibitors, making them very rare. There are only about 150 of those patients in the developed world. So it's a very small patient population. The inhibitor population in hemophilia A is much larger, and that's what drives that overall 30 to 33%.
And you're saying that the current gene therapies, they have no hope of benefiting from them because of this inhibiting factor.
That's right. So the current gene therapies that are in development enable the body to produce the clotting factor that the patient doesn't make. Now, if you have neutralizing antibodies to your missing clotting factor, then your immune system would simply neutralize the very clotting factor that the gene therapy has provided instructions to your body to make. And so it wouldn't do any good. As a matter of fact, patients with neutralizing antibodies are excluded from the clinical trials of those products. Our therapy is markedly different because we express factor 5A, which is the activated form of a clotting factor called factor 5, and it allows us to bypass any of the missing factors and any neutralizing antibodies to those factors. That's what makes us universal, and that's what makes us the first to be able to treat those patients with inhibitors.
What is the mechanism of action of your proposed therapy?
So again, we work a little further down in the coagulation cascade from factor 8 or factor 9. We work in the common pathway, and so the mechanism of action is we administer the gene therapy. It increases your expression of the active form of factor 5. That allows us to convert prothrombin to thrombin, which is what you need to restore normal clotting. Since we're below the level of the upstream missing factors and any neutralizing antibodies to those factors, in essence, we bypass any missing upstream factors and any neutralizing antibodies called inhibitors to those factors.
Is any other company working on something similar?
Nobody else is working on an activated factor 5 for in a gene therapy context. You know, that's one good thing about having a patent, we have patent protection on this idea in gene therapy. There was some previous work done on a recombinant factor 5. It's a mutant. We're not a mutant. We're wild type. It was not being studied for a gene therapy. It was called Super 5, and it was being positioned for use in patients with battlefield trauma and also with hemorrhage after childbirth. And it had a great safety profile, despite the fact that it was a mutant. Obviously, our safety profile is even better because we're wild type. And of course, we have a patent for using our approach with wild-type factor 5A in gene therapy. The Super 5 program was not positioned for gene therapy.
And at current, how far along are you in this development process?
So we're in the late stages of our preclinical studies that lead into a phase called IND, which is where you apply for an investigational new drug application with the FDA for permission to begin trials in humans. We need to raise a Series A round of financing in order to undertake the gene therapy work for IND. You know, that's a really significant barrier to many companies because of the very, very high cost of manufacturing. And hopefully that cost will continue to come down.
Well, we all know how expensive gene therapies are, particularly hemophilia. The one that has been approved around something like $3.5 million for a one-time treatment. How much does it cost in general terms to embark on a clinical trial of the kind that you are attempting to do?
For patients, if you're doing a $15 million, a 15-patient clinical trial in your combined phase 1-2, it can cost between $1 million and $2 million per patient just for the clinical trial costs alone. And then the manufacturing for the material can range between $12 and $14 million. All told, you can very quickly get to $30 million just to, you know, complete that phase 1-2 clinical trial and your IND work.
And this is a clinical trial with only 15 patients.
Remember, it's both the IND work and filing your IND and the manufacturing of the material, which is about $12 to $14 million, and then a cost of $1 to $2 million, depending on the scope of the clinical trial, for each patient. And so multiplied by 15 patients, on the low end, that would be $15 million. The manufacturing, $12 to $14 million, add the two up. You're close to $30 million, if not above.
Yeah, you do have a substantial potential market out there if this is successful.
Absolutely. So take the number that you gave of $3.5 million and just make it easier for math's sake. Put it at $3 million per a single infusion, and multiply that by just the core niche of inhibitor patients at 32,000. I'll let you do the math, but that's a sizable market to address. I think what's more important is the savings for the healthcare system. treating these patients over the course of a lifetime is about $25 million. And so at a $3 million infusion cost, you still have an opportunity to not only tremendously improve the lives of the patients, but also to save the healthcare system about $25 million minus three, so save them $22 million.
Incredible. You mentioned several times the developed world. That, of course, excludes potentially huge markets, let's say like India, which I'm imagining you have hundreds of thousands of potential patients.
It's so unfortunate, and we're developing a second gene therapy with those patients in mind. So let's think about the barriers. You know, the current barriers with any, as with any new technology, are usually in the production costs. And so when we talked about the high cost of manufacturing, you know, you have a very, very high cost of goods. Then you also are highly regulated. And so you need to proceed down a regulatory pathway that's very, very controlled and very expensive for companies to comply with. This is the clinical trial costs. And so we in the developed world are able to pay for those kinds of development activities. Ultimately, the goal is to continue to get those costs down. And that's largely dependent on easing regulation, or at least expediting the pathways as these things become more standardized. And I think we should do that with the patient, the benefit to the patients in mind. Same thing on the manufacturing side. I'll pivot briefly to that second gene therapy. And I think that this made such an impression on me. Our second gene therapy is for a disorder called hemarthropathy. And hemophilia patients, particularly who are poorly managed, you know, in the Western world, they have access to their factor replacement therapy that they need. In the developing world, not so much. And so they bleed into the joints, and then the blood has nowhere to go, and it accumulates like a rusty sludge or ooze. And gradually it erodes the lining of the joints, and then it begins to erode into the bones. Their joints become stiff, and you get kids with knees and other target joints the size of basketballs. It's absolutely heartbreaking to see. Our second gene therapy, we may be able to get the cost down sufficiently to get this to the patients in the developed world that need it the most to prevent that kind of damage to the joints while they're still young. And it's because the space that we're inside the joint that we're injecting the gene therapy into is so much smaller relative to systemic administration that we need in a hemophilia patient. So while we wouldn't be able to cure their hemophilia, you know, and it would still be cost prohibitive to do so, we could at least prevent the damage to their joints that limits their mobility over their lifetime.
This is wonderful. I'm sorry, we're about out of time. Damon Race, CEO of GeneVentive Therapeutics, thank you so much for speaking with us. It's been a pleasure. Good luck. This is Larry Luxner.
Thank you so much.
For Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.